Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 92-year-old Mike Martinez of Fort Collins, Colorado. He survived the Battle of the Bulge in Europe, attached to the 82nd Airborne Division, involved in some of the fiercest fighting around Bastogne, Belgium, where thousands of soldiers died. And you told us right before the break that you were on the crew of a 50 caliber machine gun. Was that air-cooled or water-cooled?
Air-cooled. Yeah, we didn't have any water-cooled because water would be kind of hard to get, and we had every little bit we had to change a barrel on it to keep a cool barrel on there. So that's the way it worked. We changed the barrels on it to keep a cool barrel on it, or it would have never been any good. That barrel would have caved in or whatever they do. But that's what we did. We used an air cool, and every so often you change barrels. It's like going after, you know, you got all your ammunition there, but you still had to go get the ammunition. And that's where what saved my bacon was. I had to go pick some ammo, and I'd leave. I'd come back. All I'd find was a hole in the ground. The Germans wanted that machine gun, and they took it, and they were very accurate with it.
How many men are on a crew for that 50 caliber machine gun?
Four. Two on the machine. There was a guy shooting the machine, and then there was a guy over there feeding him the ammo, and then there was two of us carrying the ammo and setting it over there. So there was four of us assigned to it, and that's when we had a full crew. But a lot of times we only had three, and sometimes even two, because, you know, we were pretty well controlled by the Germans. They controlled our crews, and it was something else to control them. And then we did not get our supplies in Belgium because the weather was not that great, and it was cold. I mean, it was cold. They claimed that was the coldest it'd been for 50 years, and I don't know if that was true or not, but, I mean, we suffered. And we were not prepared for winter. We had to gang up at nights and get together, sleep real close to one another so our heat of our bodies would kind of help stay warm. And I guess it did because we managed to survive. A lot of people didn't. And some people dug foxholes. We did not dig foxholes. We did not have time to dig foxholes. Oh, some of us did or tried to, you know. But most of us did not because we were kind of in the move either one way or the other one. Because we did give ground to the Germans not only once, several times, sometimes a little bit, sometimes a lot. And it was something else. And then our planes had come over and did make a mistake. Communication is not like they are today. So even our own airplanes would bomb us now and then. And that was something else. Makes you regret what went on. It was not their fault because, yes, they had a certain area to bomb, but they showed up at the wrong place at the wrong time because the weather was so bad. And the plans were made, per se, a week ahead of schedule, and well, not that long, but and they got out there, sent out there to bomb the Germans, and we'd gain ground so they'd bomb us. So we were kind of restricted on how we moved, but we had to move because George said we had to go. And I mean, when George said, you gotta go, you gotta go. And if you remember, you've heard of old Blood and Guts.
Yep.
He was the guts and we were the blood, and it was something else. And he controlled about everything out there.
I remember my grandfather telling me that. He was at the Battle of the Bulge as well in Bastogne where you were, and he said that's what all the soldiers called him, our blood, his guts. And you just said the same thing. So George S. Patton was the general that you're talking about, and he did want you guys to move. And you're talking about the Battle of the Bulge. Of course, you don't know at the time that it's going to be this legendary battle. You don't know what it's going to be called or any of that. You just know that you're in a freezing part of Europe. And like you said, nowhere to really lay your head at night. I mean, nowhere to take cover. Your own planes are bombing you. How did you get by day to day? What was it that kept you going?
Oh, it was not as easy road to hoe, I'll tell you that. We had to rough it out real bad. See, our planes could not give us what we needed a lot of times. Now, like, take for example, you probably heard this. The 101st was right there close to us. And they never got any supplies, as far as I know, because we used to give them some of our supplies so they could survive. Because they didn't have no ammunition to speak of, nothing to eat. They had a few sea rations, so we'd have to share with them. It was a rough road to hoe. I mean, to tell you, it was not an easy way to go. How we survived, I don't really know. I guess by really getting out there and really working for what we could get.
The 101st was famously cut off there. You were attached to the 82nd Airborne, and I know that the days probably blended together. You probably didn't get a whole lot of sleep, and you were freezing your tail off. But as far as the kinds of things that you would do or how a day would unfold, are you trying to find a position for that gun? Are you just trying to make sure nobody shoots you? I mean, how did those days kind of unfold for you?
Well, we worked it this way. We had to, yes, we always kept an eye over there on the hillside so we could move over there or whatever or wherever because we were up in the mountains. And, yes, we always looked for a place to move to, but we had to work our hides off to keep the spot that we had or the Germans would come in and move us out, and they would take over. So we had to be awful careful what we'd done. Like you and I could be sitting here and pretty soon I'd say a word and you would not reply. The Germans would have killed you. You was a dead duck, and here I was, all by myself, wandering around. It was kind of strange to sit in there and wondering where your buddy went. Your buddy went to heaven. At least I hope he did. That's what made it so strange, you know. Then you tried not to get a close friend with you because you was afraid if you come real close, you'd lose your buddy, and you didn't want that. So we kind of, you know, it's not that we didn't like him. It's just that we didn't want to lose a good friend. And I tell you, we lost a lot of good friends.
Yeah, you learned that the hard way, I'm sure. Do you remember the first time that a guy you had gotten to know, the guy that you had served with, was no longer with you and how you handled that?
Oh, yes. And you felt real bad because you lost one of your best friends, you know, and you wondered, well, who's next? And in a way, I guess you didn't feel too bad because you was glad that there wasn't you that was gone. That I do not know because I never got to be gone, so I'm glad I did not. And I'm glad I felt bad for my friends that I lost. I lost several friends out there that way. I only had one guy that I was with when we went in and we got out together, so he was from California, and I've never seen the guy since we got out of service. But we had quite a time.
Well, you say that, you're just glad it's not you. I'm sure there were times you thought it was going to be you.
Oh, you bet. There are a lot of times. One time I got a bomb landed next to us, and it went off and knocked me down. And I got a concussion out of that, and I didn't think I was going to make it because I couldn't stand up for a week. So here comes the sergeant. He said, you better get up and help us fight this war, or I'm going to shoot you. I said, Sergeant, I'd be glad if you'd shoot me because I just can't go anymore. But I managed to survive that. The sergeant changed his mind and didn't shoot me, so I'm a happy camper.
How close to you did the bomb hit?
I don't know, but not too far because it wiped a lot of guys out.
Just knocked you guys off your feet?
Yeah. And no, it killed a lot of them. Uh-huh. It killed a few of them. No, them bombs was very, very vicious.
But what happened to you? Were you knocked down or knocked against something?
I was knocked down because I had to get up. I think it was a corporal had helped me up off of there, and away we went. But that was something else. I thought I was never going to recover that one because that was.
And not to belabor the point, but most people have never experienced that, and we don't know what you went through. So is it a mental fog you're in? Is it a physical thing? Or you just don't feel like yourself? You don't have your wits about you? How would you describe the way you felt in the aftermath of that?
You just didn't have your mental part mainly because you'd have a mental part. You'd try to get up and go, but you still didn't have the strength or the, I don't know what kept you from going because you thought you could get up, but you still couldn't. That would be a very hard one to explain. Yeah. You just didn't have it. Although you wanted to, but you couldn't do it. And that's where me and that sergeant got into it. He wanted me to get up and I couldn't. Yes, I could get up and I'd fall down. So I don't know.
What finally made a difference? What do you think finally made you better?
Everything healed, I think. Or, you know, it was a concussion that lasts just so long, and it healed, and that's one of the reasons I managed to survive. And it did not send me to a medic thing. I don't know why. I do not know. But I just laid there on the ground and finally come out of it.
And when you hear that word, that name of that Belgian city, Bastogne, today, what comes to mind?
Oh, a lot of crazy things. You know, the snowstorms that would come, the cold weather, the guys out there that were freezing, and some of them didn't know what to do. And yes, the Germans had come in, they wounded a lot of them. There wasn't too much you could do for the poor guys. Yes, you could give them first aid. Yes, you had first aid kits to wrap them up, but it was something else. It is hard to visualize and very, very hard to explain to other people, you know, that you didn't have what it took to survive. But I guess we did, because here we are.
Well, and what about for you? You just told us about that bomb that really rendered you helpless for quite a while there. What are the other moments that you look back on now and say, How did I survive that?
Oh, it makes you wonder very, very seriously just how in the world we survived that. Because the Germans were not dummies, and they were just as tough as we were. The only thing was that they got spread out thinner than they should have, or they would have won, I believe. Because, I mean, there was a rough road to hoe. It was tough. Because them Germans are not easy to push out of the way. Mm-hmm. They held their ground.
Have you ever wondered, with the Battle of the Bulge in particular, and your role in it there, have you ever wondered, what if we didn't hold on? What if instead of a bulge, they had actually broken through those American lines?
Oh, yes, I did, because they'd be in control. Well, actually, they did break once. They pushed us back pretty well once, but then we managed to push back. I mean, the main reason was we had more supplies than they did, although we was very short. Our supplies lasted longer than theirs. Because, I mean, them Germans were tough. They were not a pushover at all. Well, I don't imagine none of them were, because I don't even think Japan was. But that's the way it is, you know. Them guys started a war, and they thought they could win, and they had a good start. They just did not have the supplies to fight it like we did, because our supply has been more or less unlimited. And then you got Rosie the Riveter jump in there and helped us out a lot. The thought about Rosie the Riveter, she was something else.
Yeah, she was everywhere in this country all those years ago. So you there, in the snow, in the wind, in these freezing conditions, getting shot at, losing guys left and right, day after day, week after week. Did you think it was ever going to end?
No, I didn't think so. I thought I was going to be left laying there, and that's where things would end for me. But so far, I guess there was not a bullet with my name on it, because they come awful close. I mean, they're very close. And like one of the buddies that went over there at the Battle of the Bulge, he got wounded right away, and they sent him home. But one thing about it, I did make the big parade in New York down Broadway when I come home out of the war. That's one thing. I don't think I'll ever forget that one.
Yeah, I want to hear about that, but I also don't want to let you off the hook here, because you say it came awfully close, and your buddy gets hit. That was a $1 million wound for him, because he got to come home, didn't have to live through the rest of that battle. You did, and when you say they came very close, how close are you talking, Mike?
Well, just figure, you and I are sitting right here together, and you're dead and I'm alive. Now, it couldn't get any closer, so it just come very, very close. How I survived, and a lot of time, one time, the plane come over strafing us, and I got behind a tree, and if it wouldn't have been for that tree, I would have never made it, because, I mean, he was strafing right close. It was not only one airplane. There's two or three of them come over, and they were both strafing the daylights out of us and made us run. Well, you couldn't run, or that I got you. That tree saved my skin, that was for sure. I like that tree for that. But that tree can stay there and not come home.
I wonder if that tree's still there.
I do not know. But like I said, I've had chances to go back, but I don't want to bring back them memories over there. Like, for example, well, you and I are talking about the memories going to come alive and agitate me a little bit after this, and let me know what I should have not have thought of. It is something else thinking about the memories, you know. Your memories are there, and what you've done is there, and it is something else, the kind of life that you had to lead.
And I've had a lot of guys say that, and as I mentioned, my grandfather was in some of the same places as you were, and he had nightmares and flashbacks till the day he died of some of the guys that he tried to save and couldn't. Is that what you're saying, that when you do something like this, you go back there and talking about it, that tonight when you go to bed, it's going to be hard not to see those things all over again?
That is very true. It'll come back. But somebody's got to go there and tell you guys a story anyway, so I guess in a way I'm elected and glad of that. Put it that way.
Well, we're thankful you're sharing your story with us today. And if you would like to read more about Mike's experiences, his story is featured in a book called Reflections of Our Gentle Warriors by Brad Hoops, who has been recording veteran stories for over a decade in northern Colorado. That book is available on Amazon, but I also have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. More from 92-year-old Mike Martinez in a moment, including an encounter with General Patton and another one with victims of the Holocaust. Also, Mike's
Mike's emotional journey to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Effler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.